Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up in the second half of today's show, therapist Bill Wade and co-author of The Worry-Free Mind. But first, we're joined by one half of the writing team of a book that's described as funny, smart, and very unself-help-like. I would agree on that, but I do think there's valuable information in here, and you'll find out why. Its authors are Dr. Michael Bennett, who's a psychiatrist, and his daughter, Sarah Bennett. And Dr. Bennett was educated at Harvard Medical School. He's a board-certified psychiatrist. His first book was co-authored with his daughter, Sarah Bennett, and that became a New York Times bestseller. Sarah Bennett is joining us today to talk about the book. She's written for magazines, television, and books, and has spent more than 2 years writing for a comedy sketch theater in New York. The latest effort of Sarah and Dr. Bennett is F Love, One Shrink's Sensible Advice for Finding a Last Relationship. I'm so afraid because I almost said the full word then just because it was typed out. Okay, the book is called F Love. I'm not allowed to say that. So, Sarah Bennett, welcome.
Thanks.
You better be ready
for
with
having
me. Better be ready with the beep button, Eric. Just in case. All right, Sarah. So welcome to the show. Welcome, welcome. We're pleased to have you.
Thanks for having me, despite the dangers. I appreciate it.
So, well, let's talk about that title. Why on earth, why did you call it that? Because your other book was called F Feelings.
Well, in part, it's because that's something my father actually says with patients. You know, people come in with these notions of what they want him to help them with as a shrink. And often what they want is for him to have magic powers. You know, they don't have real goals in mind. They have these sort of false wishes in mind.
Right.
They think a goal is saying, well, I want you to figure out how I can get along with my father. But if this patient is 40 and it's been 40 solid years of fighting with their father, there's nothing my father can do short of lobotomy, which is something he's been dying to do for the entirety of his career. So he'll say, well, that's not a goal. That's a wish. And it's not important. And the patient will say, but my feelings. And he'll say, no, you know, F feelings. This is not about your feelings. This is about real life things that you can do to manage this issue to make your relationship better. But it's never going to be good, and it's never going to make you feel good just because you're never going to have that kind of loving relationship. Your dad's just not that kind of guy.
Right.
And usually the patient will laugh, and actually it gets them out of the rut that they've been in. They've been so focused on this impossible solution that they haven't been able to think about the problem in a smart way. So by using, you know, the sort of brusque language, and it's like a proverbial, a metaphorical slap across the face. It gets them to snap out of it, to see things differently. To have a sense of humor about the problem, which always helps.
Right.
And get them thinking about it more realistically. And,
right.
You know, also in terms of titling the book that way, we feel that we're saving some people some money. Because if they're really expecting a sort of touchy-feely self-help book, we want them to know right away, you will be disappointed. This is not the book for you.
Well, you do tell some truths. You have segments in there called Truth or BS, and we'll get into some of those in a little while. I'm curious. You're a comedy writer and you write for other sources too. Your dad, a psychiatrist. Was this a natural pairing for you? How did you get to write together?
Oh, totally. I think, you know, for years his patients would tell him, I wish I had written that down, so whatever he told them. Because my mom is a shrink too. So their dinner table conversations for most of my childhood involved shop talk. At first, from the mental hospital they both worked in, and then with their individual patients, and, you know, asking each other for advice or second opinions. And when he had a patient that day who he had had a very satisfying conversation with, he loved to share it with us. obviously within the limits of professional ethics,
right?
And say, oh, you know, they said, oh, I wish I'd written that down. So at some point, I think when there was a writer strike in Hollywood, there was no, I was living in L.A. and there was no writing work. I just thought, oh, guess what? We're going to write that stuff down. I've got nothing better to do. Let's figure out how to do this. And, you know, because he helped form my sense of humor, certainly, he and my mother and, you know,
apparently,
a million other sources. Yeah,
yeah.
It's easier for us to work together in that way. We find the same stuff, a lot of the same stuff, funny. We have a certain shorthand because my family is very close, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah, yeah. So let's look at how you put the book together, and it is funny, but it does have some good advice in here too. How did you decide to? You've got segments in here called Did You Know the Truth or BS segment that I talked about. You pull out other segments. You've got these intense pages where you can make decisions, decision-making tools. Talk a little bit about the process and how you put this together.
Well, we decided to go with each chapter being one, what we thought was one of the things that you see most frequently in like a online profile or a personal ad. You know, when you're asked, when people say, oh, you know, what they're looking for in a partner, it's usually, I want someone with charisma, I need chemistry, someone who is smart and, you know, comes from a good family. So that's what all of our chapters are. You know, they're charisma and chemistry and looks and all the stuff that we see in personal ads. And then we put in these quizzes in chapters that I thought would be funny and useful, but, you know, from my years of being at summer camp as a kid and everyone passing around copies of 17 and Cosmo, because all women's magazines and girl magazines have are quizzes in them. You know, young women from a young age are conditioned to think about everything from, like, what's the perfect haircut for you? Who's the perfect guy for you? What horoscope is the perfect guy? You know, and it's ridiculous. So we make these funny, but, you know, not entirely useless. There is some good information to be gleaned from them. And then the flowcharts, too, was my dumb idea. And I say dumb just because I've never worked in the corporate world, and flowcharts are hard. My hat goes off to anyone who does a PowerPoint presentation. So those are the ones that are like, should my partner and I have a baby or not? And that's a hard thing to condense into two or three pages as arrows and boxes. So
right.
We'll see if we attempt that one again.
Well, I'd be curious, I mean, what kind of feedback have you got from people? Do they actually go through the flowcharts? I looked through them, and I mean, there's definitely information in there, good information.
Yeah, our editor's assistant said that she and her friends, they're like board games. Like, they like to look through them for fun to see, like, where each thing goes, and what are you going to land on? Are you going to land on run away from that guy at top speed, or are you going to land on... You know, yes, you should definitely ask him on a date or definitely have that baby. To them, it's like Monopoly, which impresses me very much. To me, it was just a nightmare.
So let's look at, let's look at chapter one to start with here before we go to break. And that's F, charisma, because when somebody is very charismatic, we are naturally drawn to them. And we can maybe confuse that for other reasons. So tell us a little bit about why we should be cautious of charisma.
Well, charisma is the most attractive quality. I mean, it's literally what can draw you into anyone. And some people are very, very charismatic. The problem is that it also makes it the hardest to, you know, snap out of it for a second and not get totally hypnotized and say, okay, this person is obviously very charming. However, I have to pay attention to whether or not they have a place to live or have been couch surfing for the past 3 years. I have to pay attention to whether I'm paying for everything or not, whether they came here with friends or they're just sort of creepily charming every woman in the place. You know, it's very hard to do that sort of quick assessment when you're in the tractor beam of a very charismatic person.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the very charismatic people can get caught up in their own charm, too. I think my father calls it Bill Clinton syndrome at one point. You know, he's someone who can charm the pants literally off of anyone and is so impressed with his ability to charm people that he doesn't seem to put the brakes on himself. when it's putting his career and his everything else in jeopardy.
Right.
So it's hard. It's impossible to date someone without a little bit of any of these traits. You know, you can't date someone who doesn't have a little bit of charm in your eyes. You can't date someone who you're not at all attracted to or who you don't have any spark with. But you have to be very careful in not getting carried away with any of these qualities and emphasizing them too much. And charisma is the one that's the easiest to get totally swept away by.
Yeah, I can see that. So five reasons good people can't find good partners. I just want to look at a couple of those real quick. You're too nice.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. My father, and in the patients that he has, he just is in private practice now. He's no longer at the mental hospital. That the patients that come in with relationship-related issues are either people getting divorced because of problems that have been there the whole time, and they either, you know, force themselves to ignore these problems in the beginning or were genuinely blind to them because they were so swept away by charisma or by good looks. Or it's women that come in who are burnt out by internet dating. And being too nice means that you're not being selective enough, that you might think that this guy after the first or second date isn't really the one for you, but you don't want to be mean and cut him off. And what we're saying is be mean and cut him off. You know, you're wasting your time and you're wearing yourself out. You're going to just burn out so quickly if you spend a lot of time on dates with guys you know you're not interested in just to save their feelings. Their feelings aren't as important as your goals. So stop being so nice. Don't be mean, but just don't be so worried about hurting them.
Right. I'm always amazed at people who say, oh, yeah, I've been going out with this guy for 3 months or 4 months or even 6 months. I'm not really into him, but I'm hoping we'll connect at one point. And I'm like, I don't think if it's not there now, it's not going to happen.
Exactly. And it's kind of mean because they might think you're very much connected.
Yes. Yeah.
So you're just sort of stringing them along and you're wasting your own time. That's 6 months that you could be looking for someone that you actually really want to be with.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're not doing anyone any favors. And it's better to be alone than to have your dance card full with someone that you just don't care that much about. I mean, that's something else we try and emphasize in the book. It's not just saying these are the ways to find someone. It's saying you also have to learn to be okay without someone, because loneliness is the number one motivator for making bad decisions in terms of who you're dating or what you're willing to settle for.
Right.
You know, if you're really like, I'll date anyone rather than be alone, then, oh, boy, are you in trouble.
Yeah.
You have to be okay with it, and then you can be selective. But if you're so desperate to just have someone with you as opposed to being by yourself, you are going to make major mistakes that can cost you in a huge way.
Right. I ran into somebody before the holidays who was dating somebody just through the end of the holidays, and once New Year's came, they were planning to dump them, but they didn't want to be alone for the holidays. I'm like, I don't really get that, but there you go. Each to his own. All right. We are talking with comedy writer Sarah Bennett. The book is co-authored with her father, psychiatrist Michael Bennett, and it is called F Love, One Shrink's Sensible Advice for Finding a Lasting Relationship. And we'll look at some more from this book when we come back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Phrase in connection first with she. That love is just a four-letter word.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next week on Conversations Live, conservationists and National Geographic filmmakers Derek and Beverly Jubert return to join us just in time for the start of Nat Geo TV's Big Cats Week and the release of their latest film, The Soul of a Cat. We'll also hear from Eric Weinmayer, who astounded the world when he became the first and only blind man to climb Mount Everest. He's also the only blind person to climb the seven summits, the tallest peaks on each continent. His latest book, No Barriers, A Blind Man's Journey journey to kayak the Grand Canyon takes us to Ecuador and Peru, to Nepal and Tibet, as Weinmayer learns to kayak and run the Colorado River.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, bringing you topics ranging from meditation to conservation, business and careers, to health and wealth.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk, 1150.
That love is just a four-letter word.
And welcome back, everyone. And talking of four-letter words, we are talking about a book called F Love, One Shrink's Sensible Advice for Finding a Lasting Relationship. By Michael Bennett, Dr. Michael Bennett, and Sarah Bennett. And Sarah is here with us in the studio on the phone today. And this book is full of great information, as well as a lot of laughs, many flowcharts to help you make sound decisions, and sidebars of wisdom. And so I want to talk, Sarah, a little bit about chemistry, because that's another up there, I would think, with charisma that draws us to people. And but you say we need some rules around chemistry, because it's not necessarily going to take us where we want to get if we're looking for a lasting relationship.
Exactly. It's chemistry, people really should think of that more than any other element here as a drug. And as everyone knows or should know, just because a drug makes you feel good, it's not good for you. In fact, the better the chance is that if it makes you feel good, it's not good for you. So there are lots of people that you can have very intense sparks with that are really, really dangerous and bad. You know, the sort of equivalent is of the bad boy that women always fall for because they're exciting is the kind of crazy woman. You know, that's the two sides of the same intense spark, very dangerous coin that a lot of people fall for just because they naturally have, you know, it's hard not to have sparks with someone who's very emotionally intense. And guys that are impulsive and kind of dangerous are emotionally intense, and women that are impulsive and kind of dangerous are emotionally intense. But they have the best chance of, you know, stealing all your stuff or physically harming you or, you know, just landing you in jail in one way or another.
Right.
So it's important not to let those intense sparks and intense chemistry blind you to very real and obvious danger.
Mm. Yeah. Do you think that, does that tend to happen more when we're younger? Do we get wiser as we're older or not?
I'd like to think so, but I have had guy friends in too far into their 20s and 30s. When they tell me, you know, like, I don't know what it is, like, all these women are crazy, I have to remind them, it's just the women you date, because you fall
right.
for crazy, crazy women because they're so intense. They come up to you and they, after saying hello or kissing you on the mouth and saying, let's go make a baby. And you never think, maybe this woman isn't right in the head. You just think, wee, this lady likes me. You know, for some men, they learn early, and others, they never learn early enough.
Yeah.
They keep learning over and over again.
And isn't that part of the key, though? You just made that comment, they seem to like me. They like me. And so often I've heard it with girlfriends and with guy friends that they say, well, they're really into me. So, but they never really ask themselves, am I really into them?
Exactly. I mean, that's what we always said about that book. I'm sure the people who wrote it are very nice, but it shouldn't be, he's just not that into you. It should be, why would I care about somebody who doesn't care enough about me to be interested and enthusiastic and tell me right away? or tell me within a reasonable amount of time. Like, don't waste your time obsessing over how someone feels about you and that someone is being playing games and being passive. It's what you feel about them and whether they're worthy of your attention to begin with. You know, women, like I said, we read these magazines. We tend to think about these things from a young age in terms of what we want from a guy. I feel like men don't think about what they want from partners enough at any age.
Yeah.
You know, I often joke that their list of qualifications seems to come from bad country songs, you know, does she wear tight jeans, does she ride in a truck? These are not important things. Like, these do not protect you from wasting your time or having your heart broken or having your credit card maxed out. You need to be more careful. You need to protect yourself and your feelings and your credit score. And I feel like men just aren't trained in that and not taught to think about that. Mm-hmm. Until it's way too late. They learn the hard way over and over again.
And sense of humor, I always think helps, but chapter 5 is F a sense of humor. Again, this can get, I think, a sense of humor, a mutual, if you're on the same wavelength, if you've got totally different senses of humor, it can be very difficult.
Yes.
But it can help you a lot get through tough situations if you have the same sense of humor and you have the sense of humor at the same time. That's another key thing. But you say it's not everything.
Oh, completely. Yeah. Well, if someone, you know, speaking as someone who writes comedy, it's important to not think that having a sense of humor is all good. I know lots of people that are funny all the time are very kind of dark and withdrawn a lot of the time when they're alone or with people or one-on-one. Or it's also hard if someone's always trying to be funny and you cannot have a serious conversation with them. You can't get them to take anything seriously.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, like, in terms of having the same sense of humor, I think that when a lot of women say, I'm looking for a sense of humor, what they're really saying, especially if they're looking for guys, is I'm looking for a guy who doesn't have a really bad temper or takes everything so seriously and flies off the handle and gets angry all the time.
Mm.
You know, a guy who has a good sense of humor is going to laugh off insults or slights. He's not going to get scary, certainly not hopefully going to get violent. So you can't say in a dating profile, I want a guy who's not a crazy, scary person and has the hair trigger temper, because most men are not self-aware of that. But you're hoping that a good sense of humor, they'll get like, oh, this guy is laid back. Like, he's not high strung. He's not wound so tightly that I'm going to be dealing with keeping his feelings in check so he doesn't, you know, fly into a rage at the slightest insult.
Right.
And, you know, because I know lots of guys that are very funny, but they are never dating anybody because they're also just sort of nerdy and alone. They don't have social skills. They can make jokes, but they can't make eye contact, that kind of thing.
So,
sense of humor is good, but funny people a lot of the time, maybe not the greatest idea. And I say this as a quote-unquote funny person.
Right. And you talk about this in the book. You talk about why so many comedians are miserable, because a lot have bipolar, as I understand it. But talk to us a little bit about that. Why are they so miserable?
Well, part of it is that if you make your career, I mean, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but going in front of drunk people and asking to be judged every night, you've got to have some self-loathing going on. That's absolute torture. And the way I describe the mindset is, I hate myself. Why doesn't everybody love me? You know, it's totally confusing when you're living it. I can't imagine dating someone who thinks that, who thinks, well, I'm a loser. Why are you with me? But why don't you think I'm the greatest person on earth?
Mm.
You know, my head is spinning just talking about it. And that's often how one's mind works when you're making fun of yourself in front of other people, hoping they'll laugh at you and give you the sense of approval from laughter, but also confirming all these jokes you're making about yourself and how, you know, single or fat or stupid you are.
Right.
It's confusing for everyone involved, but it definitely doesn't make for a well-balanced person. And there are very few stand-up comedians that have sort of stable home lives and are you know, avoid drugs and alcohol and generally a well-adjusted human being.
Right. I think that must be one of the most terrifying things to do. I just had a friend who did it, and I was like, kudos. Something I would never try. So we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to talk a little bit about family, because you talk about this in the book. It can be kind of hairy if you've been dating someone and you introduce them to family and start integrating your lives with each other. So how do we judge a prospective partner by how he or she handles family crisis?
Well, you know, one thing we always say in terms of a way to test a relationship, because when things are going well, when, you know, you have a routine that's uninterrupted and calm, you get the idea that, like, oh, we work well together. But if you go through food poisoning together or adopt an elderly cat together or, like, nurture your partner through a family crisis with their own family, that's when you really see a test in your own relationship. And that's always a worthwhile thing to do, except for the cat stuff. I'm not a cat person.
Right.
But in terms of how people relate to their family, it's just, if they have a very overbearing family or a tight-knit family, you want to see that they can establish boundaries. And I say this because my own grandmother, my father's mother, was, back then they'd call her someone with an artistic temperament. And I think today they'd use some more interesting clinical terms.
Or I have relatives like that too.
Right. And my father had to create boundaries because, you know, she would come visit for a weekend with enough suitcases to stay there for a month. And my father knew, you know, I love my mother, but my wife and my children did not sign up for this. I have to put them first. And he'd have to tell her, I appreciate the fact you packed 8 suitcases and could move in. However, your flight is on Monday. We have work and school on Monday. You can't stay beyond that. And his mom would sometimes, you know, have her conniption fit, maybe not talk to him for a couple weeks or a couple months. But that was what he needed to do. And he had to do that from the minute I met her mother-in-law. She already was pushing boundaries and, you know, trying to assert herself in her territory in her delightful craziness.
Right.
And that's what your partner needs to learn to do. If you see that their family is, you know, very argumentative and you don't want to spend time around them, you can't say it's me or your crazy family, because that's not fair to them.
Mm-hmm.
But just see if they are open to spending time with their family when you're not there, limiting the amount of time you're around, working it out so that they don't put their family before you, that they don't just reply to the neediest person who's around, that they'll say, no, this is, I have my own spouse, and when you have your own kids, to say they have to come first to me. Because you can't ask someone to reject their family. And we, even no matter how crazy our relatives are, they're still family. We don't want to have a hostile relationship with them.
Right.
But we have to have strong, firm, very solid boundaries in order to keep everybody, to keep the peace and to keep that friendliness possible. It means you can't spend a lot of time together, but you don't avoid each other altogether out of hatred.
Right.
In order to think nice thoughts about each other.
Right, right. Well, Publishers Weekly says the book, F Feelings, this is the one before this, encourages readers to sign off the BS of dating, and you've just continued that theme through this with F Love, One Shrink's sensible advice for finding a lasting relationship. And it is very funny. I laughed out loud several times, so it's been fun.
Thank you.
And again, Michael Bennett, Sarah's father, is a psychiatrist, Sarah Bennett, comedy writer. Final, very, very quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with.
That Valentine's Day is ridiculous. That with my father always says it sells more merchandise and food than Good Partner Day or I Appreciate You Every Day, if such a thing existed. If you do not have a date, don't let it get to you. It's all nonsense.
Sarah Bennett, thank you so much. And what's your website, Sarah?
It's fxckfeelings.com.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Well, we will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be joined by Bill Wade when we come back about how to stop your brain's spin cycle. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair airs live every Monday at noon. And now you can also catch the show during drive time at 6 a.m. every Friday. Hear from New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, cutting-edge health and wellness professionals, award-winning journalists, filmmakers, explorers, and adventurers. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Mondays at noon Pacific time and Fridays at 6 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
Easy on the ears, good for the soul. Alternative Talk 1150.
Get fooled by smiling faces, but don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we are talking about developing a worry-free mind in this next segment. My guest is Bill Wade. He's a licensed professional counselor and marriage and family therapist and has maintained a therapy practice for more than 30 years. He's presented workshops throughout the United States and abroad in clinical hypnosis, brain-based transformation, and meditation. And he's the co-author of Brain Change Therapy, as well as the book we're talking about today, The Worry-Free Mind, Train Your Brain, Calm the Stress Spin Cycle, and Discover a Happier, More Productive You. Bill Wade, welcome.
Good to be here, Vicki.
And I should say welcome back, because we attempted this last week, but because Seattle had a tiny little bit of snow, we lost power in the area. And then the station generator had a little issue, and so we actually ended up going off air. So Bill's back with us today, so we can talk more about this, because I liked this book. You know, there's a lot of books out there that talk about worry and anxiety and how to change, but this is really, it's based on really solid new science, but it's presented in such an accessible way for people to use. And I should say, Bill, that you co-authored this book with your wife, Carol Kershaw,
right,
who's also a clinical psychologist and international trainer in clinical hypnosis, right?
Right. That's correct. Yeah.
So go ahead. Sorry.
We've been doing this for well over 30 years, practicing as well as teaching.
And so how did the writing go together? I didn't ask you this time, I know. How did the writing of this go together? How did you collaborate on this?
Well, especially
as husband and wife. It's hard enough collaborating as writers and then your husband and wife as well.
Right. Well, we actually have learned to work well together. She'll sit at a computer and start typing, and I will kind of go into a kind of a trance, and she'll ask me questions, and when I'm in that zone state, since I've done a lot of reading on whatever we're going to write about, then I will dictate to her. I will just talk, and she will type. And sometimes she'll read to me things, and I'll edit verbally. So that's how we did this, kind of back and forth, 4, 5, 6 hours a day. And we got it done in about 5 months' time. And we stayed happy and married, and the cat survived, and we survived.
Well, that's pretty good. So yeah. The book is divided into four parts. The first part is part one, Place Your Worry Mind on Hold. So tell us how you decided to do it this way. Part two is The Brain's Superpowers. Part three, Train Your State. And part four, Ignite Your Life.
Sure. Well, a couple things. One, what I think we do that other books don't do is that the neuroscience that we have looked at says that in order to change thinking, you really have to change your mental state. And so we begin with the neuroscience that backs that up. And then what are some immediate stopgap measures that a person can do to alter the mental state that they're in. And that by that means either the predominant brainwave frequency that has the highest amplitude, if they're anxious, they're probably in high beta. What can you do to bring that down so that you're more in the zone? Then it's easier to change your thoughts. And what we suggested early on was to do something such as take a walk, something that gives bilateral stimulation. Because when a person's anxious, they're frozen up, if you will, then blood tends to pool more on one side of the brain than the other. So going and taking a walk, tapping, tossing a ball over your midline, something like that, tends to rebalance the flow of blood. It also distracts the person so they're not stuck in perseverating. So that was the first thing that we decided to do. Then we wanted to talk about the neuroscience, more about the neuroscience of change, talk about neural circuitry, and also to talk about different brainwave frequencies, all the way from delta up through beta, and what those mean and how they can be useful, then how to lower those. We then got into looking at what are more long-term ways that you can begin to inoculate yourself from worry, and that would have to do with things like meditation, a deep dive in terms of trance behavior, hypnosis that helps reset the brain by going into a theta state, and then looking at flow states at the end. What is the brain or the mind capable of doing once that you have gotten to settle down and are able to have a fairly functioning brain that's not being reactive? We do also some other short-term interventions, which is don't listen to the news on a constant basis. Turn it off.
Yeah.
The things you cannot do anything about, and hearing it 15 times a day is not something that is useful.
Yes, and you know, we touched on this last time, but some people are in a state of fear and worry right now and feeling right. A little despondent. I'm a news hound. I love to watch the news and know what's going on in the world, but I'm limiting myself to just a quick look at BBC in the morning, and then I'll catch a quick thing at the end of the night. But it does get too much, and it can really play on your mind.
Right. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. You hear the same thing over and over again. And, you know, the 24-hour news stations have got to keep interest, so they keep saying with greater and greater intensity, regardless if you're on the right or the left, some problem that you have to pay attention to and be alerted. And it just keeps people in a state of hyper-arousal, if you will.
Yes.
So their beta brainwaves are way up in the high-level range that has to do, that correlates with anxiety and fear.
Yeah, that makes sense. I find myself listening more to news headlines, and when the talking heads come on, that's when I turn off.
Right.
Because everybody's got an opinion, right?
Right. Or if you talk, listen to a talking head, listen to somebody talk in measured tones and is balanced, and listen to that once, and then stop. Yeah, the talking heads sometimes just spin. I think of the bobblehead that you can buy in stores.
Yeah.
And that's what they do, they bobble.
Well, we talked last time about the importance of zoning out to make big decisions, the importance of daydreams, and I wanted to just expand on that a little because it, you know, it, I think it's easy for some people to get lost in their daydreams and never actually start putting things into action. So what's the key to that, getting that balance of that zoning out and daydreaming versus we're just in that state of constantly dreaming and procrastinating?
Right. Well, you just mentioned something in terms of procrastination. If a person is zoning out on a continual basis, they may be using the zoning out, going into an alpha or theta state, as a way to avoid facing whatever it is that they need to face, whatever decision that they need to face. That's different than using an alpha or theta state, a dreamy type state, as a way to let your mind come in to create a solution. Part of the way of dealing with that is to put a time limit on it. Take a 20, 30-minute break, maybe even an hour break, and rest and relax, and then get back to doing the task that you were doing. Well, two things tend to happen. One is that you go back to the task in a more relaxed state, and you begin to access information that you may have had in the back of your mind. And when people start doing that, what they'll find is that then that zoned out state actually helps them in the task. So putting a time limit on how long they're going to zone out, how many times during the day they're zoning out, and also being aware of what happens when you zone out. Do you come back refreshed, or are you dreading getting back to the task? If you're dreading getting back to the task, what's happening is then you're using the zoning out as an avoidance, and you really aren't allowing yourself then to re-engage. And that's a misuse of the zoning out.
Right. It's about being mindful, isn't it, of what we're doing and not distracting ourselves. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break because I'd like to get into neuro wellness rituals to break through crisis. There's some great information in here. And we'll continue into developing that supermind, how we can tap into that instantly. Some great information. The book is called The Worry-Free Mind, Train Your Brain, Calm the Stress Spin Cycle, and Discover a Happier, More Productive You. My guest today is Bill Wade. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
This is you on a bad day, you on a pale day. Just do your best and don't worry unfair.
Next week on Conversations Live, conservationists and National Geographic filmmakers Derek and Beverly Jubert return to join us just in time for the start of Nat Geo TV's Big Cats Week and the release of their latest film, The Soul of a Cat. We'll also hear from Eric Weinmayer, who astounded the world when he became the first and only blind man to climb Mount Everest. He's also the only blind person to climb the seven summits, the tallest peaks on each continent. His latest book, No Barriers, A Blind Man's Journey to Kayak the Grand Canyon, takes us to Ecuador and Peru, to Nepal and Tibet, as Weinmayer learns to kayak and run the Colorado River.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Missing Link supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, February 19th, it's a Best Sunday with Dr. Nels Rasmussen in the studio. Dr. Nels can help with emotional, behavioral, or physical problems. He can test for allergies, drug, or supplement compatibility and dosages for you or your animal friends. Call us for a free remote session. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I'd build secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I'd do the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Find our app in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and take us with you wherever you go. Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Bill Wade. He's a therapist, family and marriage family therapist and professional counselor. And he co-wrote this book with his wife, who is a clinical psychologist and also, like Bill, an international trainer in clinical hypnosis and brain-based psychological transformation. And his wife is Carol Kershaw. The book, The Worry-Free Mind. Bill, I wanted to look at, you have chapter 7 is called Neuro Wellness Rituals to Break Through Crises. And I think this is a very valuable chapter for people, and especially right now. Because isn't it, I've read study after study and done shows on this before, because it's our ability to bounce back that is key to our happiness long term, correct?
Yes. We have this innate ability to move towards health, and people are going to go through, whether it's accidental or just developmental, what we would call life shocks. There's going to be losses that happen: aging, loss of a partner, job, children even growing up and leaving home and going off to college or moving out completely. Those kinds of changes disrupt the flow. Many of them are natural changes, as well as taking care of an ill spouse or a parent or something like that. So when we're being responsible, that's important. But it's also important to notice, is there tension in your body? What's happening with you? So again, a form of mindfulness that tells you, wait a minute, I need to pay attention. And then taking time out and negotiating this with whomever that you're taking care of or whatever is going on, so that you take time out, drink a cup of tea, take a walk in the woods. Actually, there's some research that if you walk barefoot on ground, that you're connecting electrically with the earth. And so there are some rituals like that that are really important to do to take care of yourself. Otherwise, what can happen is that people wind up getting burnt out. And they may be getting burnt out. If we give a story in the book about a man who was taking care of his wife for a long period of time and loved her deeply, but he was afraid to let himself just take care of himself. And he learned to do that and still met his obligation and as a loving spouse to his wife. But he also took time out for himself in ways that were very important to him. And so that's one of the things that we can do, is if you don't, then little bitty things tend to become more of a crisis than they would normally be, because you don't have the energy, you don't have the reserve. You really are kind of running on fumes, if you will. So that's something that's important to do, is develop rituals of self-care.
Yeah, so important. But isn't it always those self-care things that we let fly out the window at the first opportunity when we get really busy? You know, we stop working out, we drink more caffeine, we stop eating regular meals.
Sure. Over the short term, you know, again, if you just had a new baby born in your house, everybody's going to overfunction. Mom has to rest. Somebody's got to take up the slack. And so over short term, that's okay. And that may help the family system. It may happen at tax time for certain businesses. But again, to be mindful, so that if you've gone a week and you haven't done anything, you begin to pencil it in. When we had our clinical practice going more fully, I would write in time to go out and work out. That was actually in my calendar, so that if somebody wanted an appointment during those times, they couldn't have that because it was already booked. Taking time and penciling it in your calendar helps remind us that you've got to do something that's self-caring. The other thing is, and we as adults sometimes don't follow the advice that we give our own children, which is to have good bedtime hygiene, to wind down, not be watching the news at 10 o'clock at night and the talking heads are spinning.
Right.
But to take time and just relax, unwind, and let the lights go low. When we had the last hurricane in Houston, I think it was 2008, Hurricane Ike, we were without power for about 5 days. And what Carol and I noticed was that we would come home. We had power in the office. We would come home, and the sun would be setting, and we would sit by candlelight and have dinner. Couldn't watch the television, and we talked with each other, and we wound down at night. Some of the best sleep that we had was that week or so that we were without without power. So winding down is also very important.
Yeah, I love that. It reminds me when I lived in San Diego, and I don't know why I have not done this for a long time. I used to have one night a week where we'd not use electric light. We'd just use candlelight and no television. Classical guitar music, you know, but something very gentle, very calming. And it made such a difference to the stress load that I was under right then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Metallica is a great band, but sometimes you need something like classical guitar or they're great for the Grammys, but at 10 o'clock at night, no, I don't think so.
I love this. One of the rituals you talk about, because I do this a lot, is I walk a lot, and I watch the birds flying. We have a lot of geese and seagulls where I live, but I love watching the geese fly in format, and that's one of the rituals you talk about in the book.
Yeah, watching nature, watching birds, because they do fly in formation, and it's a reminder that there is a certain order to nature, a certain order out there. When you slow down enough to watch what's going on at an implicit level, unconscious level, but very profound level, it's a message to us that we are part of this. And I find that also reassuring, as well as if you take a walk in the woods or walk along the beach and look at nature, the birds, the formations, and how they're flying, then I think for me, and it sounds like for you too, it's very reassuring, and I think the reassurance comes that there's an order and that we're a part of that.
Right, right. And so a final thought here, it's some great advice in this book. You say that we can instantly tap into our alpha synchronicity. Just a very quick word on that.
Yeah, when you practice, again, this is where meditation or a deep dive. If you practice that enough, it's like any skill. We can turn on and off certain neural circuits. So fear can be turned off with humor. And we're talking about the humor that a child has, a belly laugh, or curiosity, the surprise, the laughter. And being able to go into an alpha state is something that once a person practices it, they can shift that almost immediately, instantly. So the practices doesn't mean that you have to take 30 minutes forever to change those states. Once you learn how to do that, again, think about learning to walk. When you learn to walk, it took months for most people. Some kids just do it. But for most of us, it took some months of standing up, falling down, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Once you learn, then you get up and walk. It's the same way with going into an alpha state. You can learn to do that, and that you reset yourself almost instantly.
Well, it's a great book. And Bill Wade, I want to thank you so much for coming back after we got cut off last time, and appreciate your insights and wisdom on The Worry-Free Mind. The book is called The Worry-Free Mind. Train your brain, calm the stress spin cycle, and discover a happier, more productive you. Do you have a website, Bill?
Yes, drscarolandbill.com.
Thank you very much. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
And thank each of you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with a live new show. If you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. 7617. I'm not going to direct you to our site right now because we are having a few issues with it, but that will be resolved shortly. But you can find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. You can also find me on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. So we'll see you next week. And until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.